This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Afghanistan, Pakistan, the subcontinent, very much in turmoil, not only because there are bad actors, malign presences, but also because of the flooding in Pakistan that has left the population at great risk for food security. We begin, however, with a declaration by the U.S. State Department. Bill Rajo of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy keeps the Long War Journal, and former ambassador from Pakistan to the United States, Hussein Haqqani, who is now at the Hudson Institute, here to comment on these two moving stories. First, Al-Qaeda, Pakistan Taliban leaders in Afghanistan. The U.S. State Department added three senior Al-Qaeda leaders and the deputy emir of the movement of the Taliban in Pakistan to its list of specially designated global terrorists within these last days. And the names here are significant because this gets very much wrapped up into what is Taliban, what is Al-Qaeda, what is Afghanistan, what is Pakistan, what are the risks to the region. Bill, a very good evening to you. From your write-up at the Long War Journal, this much looks like a melange of bad actors suddenly named as terrorists. Why now, Bill? Is there one trigger to this, or is it a long list of crimes by these men that have led to this? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Yeah, first, the process to get on that designation list, it takes time to get individuals. One of the things, you know, I've often been frustrated about is, why isn't so-and-so, we know, on this list? Well, state and treasury and the interagencies, they have a process that they go through within, and they want this information to be ironclad. So when they present it to the United Nations and to European states and allies, that they're likely to get on board with these designations. That being said, it isn't a coincidence that one of the individuals, the deputy emir of the movement of the Taliban in Pakistan, just this week, he announced the end of the ceasefire with the Pakistani government. His name is Mufti Muzahim. He's not only the deputy emir of the movement of the Taliban in Pakistan, but he's also their military commander. So he was the one who announced the call off of that ceasefire. So it's possible that this was already, and they were just waiting to release it. And they said, oh, well, now's as good a time as any. And that also gets some goodwill with the Pakistanis. Why the U.S. is trying to get goodwill with the Pakistani military, but we had the U.S. general go over there, that's head of CENTCOM, go and meet the senior Pakistani general. I can't remember who it was. It may be the new Pakistani chief of staff. Hussein could probably knows the answer to that. And so that designation certainly would make Pakistan happy. Now, with all of this, and you mentioned this, John, sure, the Pakistanis are happy about this, but they're responsible for people like Mufti Muzahim being alive because they support the Afghan Taliban, and Muzahim is sheltering in Afghanistan, and Muzahim and the movement of the Taliban in Pakistan received support from the Afghan Taliban, and then the Pakistani Taliban attacked the Pakistani state, and on it goes. We've called that the wheel of jihad. That's that cycle of supporting the friend of your enemy in order to and this is why we get nowhere in the region, John.
Bill, they're sheltering in Afghanistan. The State Department declares so. How does this come together with what we're told are lengthy conversations about helping the Taliban government because of the complete collapse of food security in Afghanistan? Are these separate worlds? On the one hand, the Taliban is vouchsafing violence against the U.S. and its allies. And on the other hand, we're helping them sustain their credibility.
Yeah, this is the Afghan Taliban's hypocrisy in all of this must be noted. They stated numerous times just recently, about 2 weeks ago, that they will not allow Afghanistan to be used, Afghan soil to be used by foreign terrorist groups to attack their neighbors or attack the West or U.S. allies. And yet here they are. They're sheltering three senior Al-Qaeda leaders and the deputy leader of the movement in the Taliban in Pakistan. So it's a farce. The Afghan Taliban claims that there's no foreigners, foreign terrorist groups operating from the soil? Of course they are. The movement in the Taliban in Pakistan is a very visible one. Al-Qaeda is also another one. And yet the U.S. government seems hell-bent on providing aid to Afghanistan, which will have to go through the Afghan Taliban. And this aid, you know, aid like money, it's fungible. If the Afghan Taliban doesn't have to pay to support its people to survive, it's more money that they could use to prop up groups like the movement of the Taliban in Pakistan and pay to shelter al-Qaeda, like Ayman al-Zawahiri, who was living in a safe house in Kabul when the U.S. killed him in a drone strike this summer. That cost money to put up a guy like Ayman al-Zawahiri. And the U.S., by providing aid to the Afghan Taliban, because that's what it would be doing, is paying. We're paying our enemies to do their dirty work.
Yes, it's called a double game. And that brings me to the ambassador. Mr. Ambassador, a very good evening to you. A lengthy piece in Foreign Affairs, very helpful. I learned from Matahi Afzal, a fellow at the Foreign Policy Program at the Brookings, that Imran Khan has great, great success with younger, urban, educated Pakistanis. I note in this article, 64% of Pakistan is under the age of 30, and the urban elite are sophisticated in the internet, and Imran Khan is favored, especially because this is the future. This is the present middle class and future middle class. So this is not ordinary understanding of populism. It looks to be a movement of the future. Does that comport with what you observe in Pakistan, that Imran Khan has the ear of tomorrow? Good evening to you.
Good evening. I do not completely agree with that characterization. I think that Dr. Afzal is reflecting her own feelings because she comes from Pakistan's educated middle class, and that segment that is frustrated with Pakistan's old political parties as well as the military. And since Imran Khan targets both of them, she feels that he has more support. The fact of the matter is that since this piece was written and originally published on the 24th of November, Khan has called off what he used to call his long march. And he has called it off because very clearly he was hoping that his actions will either force the civilian government into holding early elections, which he thinks he can win, and alternatively, it will influence the appointment of the next army chief. It failed in doing either. Now, are there young Pakistanis who do not like old style Pakistani politics, which is essentially patronage politics, which is dynastic politics, two political parties headed by members of one family each, with power bases in specific Pakistani geographic regions? Yes, he does have the support of a lot of young people who would rather go past that. But he does not really offer something for Pakistan's future except a protest vote. So in that sense, he is old-style populist. And there are enough Pakistani members of the Pakistani intelligentsia who have tried to explain his phenomenon and make it look more positive, but it really isn't. And now that the new army chief has been appointed, Khan has kind of started retreating because, very frankly, there were people in the army leadership who were supporting him. And he has always done his politics based on encouragement from one faction or another within the IFI or the army. The new army chief is cleaning house, giving early retirement to a lot of these military officers who were politically involved. He will have his own political involvement, as is the Pakistani military tradition. And so I think we will have a new board game. We are not having early elections, so the assumption that Imran Khan's popularity will turn into immediately into votes, that's not going to pan out. Pakistan has bigger problems. It still has the impact of the floods. The economy is not doing too well. It has just barely survived the potential of a loan default. And its exports have plummeted partly because of the floods, but partly because its exports have been priced out of the international market. So all of those are bigger problems than Imran Khan's grievance over what happened between him and his former mentor, the former Pakistan Army Chief, General Bajwa. General Bajwa brought him into office, and removed him from office. And so it's a little bit of a spiteful sort of anger game between the two of them. That game ended with the appointment of a new army chief.
I learn also from Ms. Afzal that the Sharif prime ministership, Shahbaz Sharif, is qualified by the fact that the assumption is that his older brother, Nawaz Sharif, living in London, is the de facto prime minister. That suggests that the government is either not transparent or that there's a conspiracy thinking in Pakistan that helps Imran Khan. Is that accurate to your understanding, Mr. Ambassador?
Well, conspiracy thinking, definitely. And Imran Khan is now Pakistan's biggest conspiracy theorist, espousing all kinds of conspiracy theories. But look, this whole situation arose because the army and Imran Khan originally conspired to have Nawaz Sharif disqualified when he was an elected prime minister with full support of parliament. And they got judges involved and in what was then considered by the Pakistani legal experts as a very flimsy judgment by the then Supreme Court Chief Justice. Pakistan has a very unique situation in which the Supreme Court Justice is not just primus inter pares between or the first among equals with his fellow judges. He can actually constitute benches in a way in which instead of all judges hearing a politically important case, only two or three can make the judgment. And so Imran Khan and then army chief removed Nawaz Sharif from office through a judicial maneuver. Nawaz Sharif's political party remains beholden to him. And so his brother is definitely somebody standing in for him. And everybody knows that. The voters do not vote for Shahbaz Sharif. They vote for Nawaz Sharif. And so do members of Pakistan's intelligentsia who do not like the two major political parties resent that? Absolutely. Transparency would be that whoever is in office should be the person who should both wield power and responsibility. The problem is that there is a lot of baggage, a lot of unfair things have happened in Pakistan's politics through the military and the intelligence services meddling. And at one point, Imran Khan was a beneficiary of those. And now he feels he's not a beneficiary anymore. And he is again publicly now saying that I'm not against the military intervening in politics. I'm against the fact that the military is not intervening on my behalf. Now, that does not necessarily represent the kind of revolution that some people say Imran Khan represents.
I'm speaking with Hossein Haqqani, former ambassador from Pakistan to the United States, now at the Hudson Institute, and Bill Rajo, senior fellow of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, who with his colleagues keep the Long War Journal. When we come back, the Islamic State. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.